And now, words and pictures.
Good morning and welcome to Words and Pictures on KBOO Portland. I'm your host, S.W. Conser. For those of you who've been enjoying our program these past couple of years, you know that we've been spotlighting Northwest cartoonists and animators, some celebrated, others up-and-coming members of the comics community. We've had some great conversations about art and literature, humor and politics, but some listeners have never really been convinced that cartoons have any serious relevance or power to make a difference in the world. Well, not to put too fine a point on it, but in light of the recent incidents of this past month, it seems that the world can indeed be rocked by the power of the cartoonist's pen. So today, Words and Pictures is taking a radically different tack. Christopher Zeiler is joining us from Copenhagen. He's a cartoonist for the Danish newspaper Universitetsavisen, and he's been much in the news himself these past few weeks. Mr. Zeiler, good morning, or rather, good evening where you are.
Good evening to you, or good morning. Good morning, as it might be.
We want to introduce you to our listeners by mentioning that you have been the subject of much conversation these past couple of weeks in newspapers around the world, in fact, from Norway to the U.S. to England, and all for a cartoon you submitted to the Jyllands-Posten, or Jutland's Post, a Danish newspaper. Some of our listeners will know that that is the newspaper which originally published the controversial cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. Could you tell us about the cartoon of yours, a cartoon which was rejected by Jyllands-Posten because, so you were told, it might offend their readership?
Well, yes. It was a gag, really. It was sort of an absurd story about the resurrection of Jesus Christ, which I made as a doodle about 3 years ago. And I was singing in a choir, and we were rehearsing a piece about the resurrection, and I was doodling Christ sort of floating out of a grave, which is really not how it happened, I suppose, but it illustrated the point. And then I had him do a little twist, and so it was a resurrection with a twist, and there was a sideways resurrection with some Danish pastors sort of giving him grades on the performance and so forth. And I thought it was funny in itself, without really having much of a point, I suppose. And I submitted this cartoon to Jyllands-Posten and several other newspapers, in fact, before it ended up in Universitetsavisen eventually. And Jyllands-Posten was the only one to give me a completely negative reply in that the then editor of the Sunday edition.
That was Jens Kaiser, who's no longer with the newspaper, I believe?
I'm not sure if he's no longer with the newspaper, but I wanted to point out that this was not Mr. Flemming Rose, who's been a big part of the recent controversy.
Right, right, and he's hiding out in New York, the last I heard.
He got a holiday.
Right.
Probably needed it, too.
I, in fact, have been contacting the Jyllands-Posten by email and the original 12 cartoonists who published, and they're all incommunicado. I did get a reply from the Jyllands-Posten saying, we're not talking to anybody.
Well, I could certainly sympathize with that, I think, at this point. I mean, it must be quite tough for their staff and everyone there. But anyway, I ended up playing a small sort of supporting part in this drama because of my cartoon that was rejected because this Sunday editor felt it might provoke an outcry amongst his readership.
Yeah, you've become a symbol of what people think of as hypocrisy, that the same newspaper which talked about a religious freedom turned down a cartoon about the Christian resurrection, and one, in fact, that several Christians among your friends and family were not offended by, including, I believe, a clergy member. And I want to mention that our listeners can go to the KBOO website, kboo.fm, and actually look at your cartoon and see what they think for themselves under the public affairs heading.
Oh, yeah. They should do that. I mean, for all I know, this Sunday editor might be a better judge of these things than I was at the time. But I certainly didn't mean any offense by my drawing. It was something I considered pretty innocent. So yes, I felt that there was a measure of double standards in the way that Jyllands Posten had reacted in this whole issue about the freedom of speech and freedom of expression and the right to criticize and all religions and publish anything. So I went forward with this story and it did create a lot of response, probably more than I would have liked looking back on it, in fact, because then everything became crazy and people started burning embassies and I felt it was more important for everyone to calm down than to stir up matters further, which I must admit that I played a part in doing myself, I suppose.
So have you been getting so many calls these days that it's hard to sit down at your drawing board and do cartoons?
No, not that many, but there have been quite a few, and they have been from mostly emails from people, well, from all continents, really, apart from the South Pole.
Oh, really? That's very interesting. As a bit of a postscript, it should be noted that a year after your cartoon was rejected by the Jyllands Posten, it ran in the Easter edition of your normal paper, Universitetsavisen.
Yep, and there was no response, none whatsoever, in fact. Perhaps to their own disappointment, I don't know.
Well, in the U.S., we have the First Amendment and the Bill of Rights, which guarantees free expression. And what can you tell me about the Danish laws and traditions? We tend to see you as a very liberal and tolerant society.
Well, we would consider ourselves that as well, I think, among many other positive things that we like to consider ourselves. We do have similar laws guaranteeing the right of freedom of expression, and I think these laws have been well. I mean, I've certainly never felt that my own freedom of expression was in any way restricted, and that I have had to censor myself in what I've said or done.
So you don't see self-censorship as an issue.
KBO.
The word itself is a bit odd because censorship is I suppose what someone else does to you or to your work, but no, I haven't, and that's part of the reason why I thought that Jyllands Posten was in the wrong in the first place in commissioning the drawings of the Prophet Muhammad to make a point about the freedom of speech being under pressure.
Well, I'll give our listeners a little background on the story about the Jyllands Post. And there's an interesting timeline here. The Jyllands Post's culture editor, and this is Fleming Rose, commissioned the original cartoons from 12 different artists, many of them well known. And they were published in September of last year, September of 2005. And the editor, Mr. Rose, says he was fighting what he saw as increasing self-censorship in the culture, and that he was inspired by the plight of Kare Blutkin, the author of a children's book about Muhammad, who could not find an artist in Denmark, supposedly, who was courageous enough to illustrate his book. So the cartoons were commissioned, and our listeners can view the original 12 cartoons along with their translations, the translations of their captions, by going to kboo.fm. There are links on our homepage under the Public Affairs heading, and they also link to your webpage so people can see your cartoons. Now, when you're looking at these cartoons, these 12 cartoons, clearly only a few of them are actually critical of Muhammad or Islam. Some of them are complimentary. And a large number of them are critical of the Jyllands Posten and its editors. There are two or three caricatures of the editor who commissioned the cartoons. One has him wearing a turban with an orange stuck in it, and the orange says PR stunt on it. This is a reference for our listeners to the story of Aladdin. An orange fell into Aladdin's turban, and that led to great fortune. And the orange motif shows up again in Kurt Vestergaard's cartoon. This is the most controversial of the cartoons, the bomb in a turban cartoon. But that was also based on the orange falling into the turban.
Well, yeah, it's true. When you look at the cartoons, they're quite innocent. And I think that I mean, there's a terrible, I don't know if irony is the word, but there's, I mean, it's completely awful for these cartoonists who took up the challenge of Jyllands Posten in fact to make the opposite point of what the editor of Jyllands Posten wanted in this case, and then were just were just labeled along with everyone else in this whole issue and have in fact received death threats and nasty things like that and now have to really lay low for a while this whole thing is still a heated issue in Denmark. So it's true, yeah, and it's correct as you say that the drawings were quite of a different character, the 12 drawings.
Yeah, as you said, this is very sad, a sad situation for so many of them who,
yeah.
I visited the websites for several of the Jonas Posten cartoonists, and there's one fellow in particular, Franz Fuchsel, who he seems like a very gentle, grandfatherly type, and his cartoon was very conciliatory. I don't believe Muhammad was even depicted in it. There were a couple of swordsmen, and they were being called off by a caliph who tells them, calm down, it's just a drawing by a Danish non-believer. And one of the things that Mr. Fuchsel has done is he's since announced an auction of his artwork to benefit earthquake victims in Pakistan. He's also establishing a cartoon prize to celebrate free expression. But I'm sure he never imagined that that he'd ever get into something like this.
No, he didn't. And I mean, I'm quite an obscure figure in this whole thing. I mean, he's a far more well-known cartoonist than I've ever been. And so no one thought to ask me if I wanted to make a drawing for Jyllands Posten in this instance. So fortunately, I didn't have the dilemma to fight with, and also I had a different sort of backstory for considering my own sort of dealings with Jyllands Posten. But having said that, I mean, I can understand why they must have felt that. Being presented with this case, a case of censorship, could fall for the temptation to work with Jyllands Posten in this case, even if it is quite as it is a right wing newspaper with anti immigration leanings, I think, in its editorial.
And some of the cartoonists were skeptical of the editor's motives, and you can see that in some of the cartoons.
That's true, and that's just, I mean. The people who went out and rioted in the streets of Damascus and elsewhere and who torched the Danish embassy there and the general consultancy in Lebanon afterwards, I mean they don't care much about the finer points of this debate that's been going on in Denmark for months and these cartoonists have completely who are completely innocent of anything, any wrongdoing have been caught in this whole thing. And that's just bizarre and really terrible.
If you've just tuned into the Radio Zine, the show is Words and Pictures, and I'm S.W. Konser. We're joined this morning by Danish cartoonist Christopher Zeeler. Well, I think our listeners are interested in finding out how heated the situation has become in Denmark itself. Here in the United States, like you said, we see a lot of sensational video and not much else. We know that embassies are burning in Syria and some other Middle Eastern countries, but it's not a story we get a lot of complexity about in our media.
Well, no, it's been heated in Denmark in the sense that people have been afraid. I mean, this is considered the worst international crisis for this country, and I suppose since the Second World War, perhaps rather dramatically put by the media. But that's how they label it, and it's something that's being followed continuously in the press. But it's not heated in the sense that there have been riots or anything near to that in Denmark, fortunately. And I should say that on the plus side, I mean, there's been lots of reflection among people as to how to progress from this whole situation, how to move forward now. And there have been demonstrations urging peace and mutual respect, and people have lit candles and put them in their windows to make a statement that they wanted dialogue instead of conflict. And so it's heated. It's the biggest story, and it does make people worried. And the boycott of Danish products in the Middle East is something that is felt by anyone who has dealings in those countries. And Denmark is a small country, and it's a an exporting country as well. So, I mean, these things are taken seriously as well on a much more pragmatic level.
Well, I think it's certainly not just cartoonists who are causing the problem. Let's see, for example, in the Netherlands a couple of years ago, the filmmaker Theo van Gogh made a film about the abuse of Muslim women, and he was gunned down in the street for it. And a lot of people think this was a turning point. Certainly, right-wing political parties in both Denmark and the Netherlands have seized the opportunity to toughen their stance, and they've been quite successful lately.
That is unfortunately true, too, yes. The main far-right party in Denmark, the Danish People's Party, have had a great deal of support because of this issue. I mean, even so, there are still 87% of the population who do not support this stance of confrontation with another culture and another religion.
This seems to have fostered a climate of fear among some people and a climate of reassessment in others, but feelings are mixed. You say that multiculturalism is a fairly recent phenomenon in Denmark, and that most Danes really don't mix much with the Muslim population, but integration has recently become a huge issue, and this is certainly part of it.
It is certainly part of it, and it's part of the whole context of why the cartoons in Jyllandsposten had the impact that they had. It was like a powder keg sort of waiting to explode. I think many people would think so. I mean, the context of the drawings and the idea of putting them out to educate a religious minority that already felt pressured by certain forces of the political establishment in Denmark would, in this context, they became much, much more inflammatory than they might have been in different circumstances. So no, I don't think it's a coincidence that this issue exploded as it did at this point.
Well, how do you think most Europeans feel about Muslim immigrants? Are they looked at as refugees that are escaping repressive regimes for freedom and equality? Or is there a lingering fear that they're coming over to the West to try to set up a theocracy in Europe, for example?
I think there's a lingering fear amongst people who are ready to be fearful, people who are already fearful of globalization in many other aspects, people who are afraid of losing their jobs, and they're perhaps afraid of losing whatever remains of their own sort of religious culture if that's sort of seeped out. and these populist parties have been able to tap into this fear in several European countries, but the Danish People's Party, the Danish variant of this is still a relatively small party, thankfully, I think. Which just shows that I don't think it's something that Europeans as such feel, but it's certainly something that some Europeans feel.
Now, again, the Danish People's Party is the right-wing party who tend to be very pro-business.
They're not the main right-wing party. They're less pro-business than they're just basically old-fashioned nationalist.
I see. And when you say there's some religious conflict, is there still a religious tradition in Denmark, or is it more of the secular tradition that some people feel is under attack?
Well, it's that is a difficult question, I think, to answer. But we have, I mean, this is a small country of 5 million people, and it's and in its present state, being the size it's had for about 140 years now. It's a very homogeneous society, with a Protestant Christian culture dating back to the time of the Reformation, and everyone's just sort of taken that for granted and not really given it much thought. But most people, I think, almost 90% of the population is still a member of the state church. Interestingly. The Lutheran Church of Denmark, which is headed by the Queen. And it's something, I mean, it's not that people are very devout and go to church very often. It's more like something they do around Christmas time as part of a tradition that is not as much a religious tradition as a cultural one. And for some, this is probably something that they feel is under pressure.
Well, one of the complaints about past government policies is that immigrants have been encouraged to live in segregated neighborhoods and that the schools there don't stress the local language or the liberal values of the larger society. Do you think that's a valid issue to be brought up?
I don't know about the schools and whether they stress these points because I think the schools are pretty similar no matter where you go in this country. But certainly immigrants have been not encouraged to live in ghetto-like surroundings, but more as a result of failed integration policies. Many have ended up living in these sort of isolated communities, and so a lot of people.
I'm so sorry we have to interrupt that program for our regularly scheduled program. It is now 10:15. It is KBOO in Portland. And we are checking in with Rabbi Michael Lerner, the editor of Tikkun magazine, and here is Michelle. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, and thank you. Good morning. This is Michelle Schroeder-Fletcher at KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. And we are speaking by phone today with Rabbi Michael Lerner. Are you there, Mike?
Yes,
okay, wonderful. Regarding his new book, The Left Hand of God, Taking Our Country Back from the Religious Right, and about how it's up-and-coming events in Portland. I want to, first of all, welcome you to KBOO and the Northwest.
Thank you.
And before we get started, I want our listeners to know a little bit about your coming to town and a couple of events. March 5th, from 9 and 11 a.m., there's sermons at the First Unitarian Church, which is at 1011 Southwest 12th Avenue. And for anybody who's interested, 503-228-6389. And then again that night, which is Monday, March 5th, at 7 p.m. at the First Congregational Church, which is 1126 Southwest Park.
It's Sunday, right?
Yes.
Right.
And then, I'm sorry, that's Sunday, because I also want our listeners to know that you will be a guest on Talk Radio this Monday, March 6th, from 7:30 to 9 o'clock at KBOO.
Great.
So thank you. Thank you for being with our listeners.
I'm going to be at Powell's also, right?
Yes. Now, that I am not sure about.
The next night, on Tuesday night, I'm going to be at Powell's.
Well, excellent, Rabbi. So thank you, and thank you again for being with us today. For some of our listeners who might not be as familiar with your work, can you remind us of Tikkun and your organization and your long history of involvement in the liberal and progressive causes?
Yes. Well, I was a leader of the anti-war movement in the 1960s and president of Berkeley Students for Democratic Society and from 1966 to 68, and then was one of the Seattle Seven in 1970, sent to prison for my organizing work against the war. And have since then become a rabbi and a psychotherapist and written 10 books, including The Politics of Meaning and Jewish Renewal, A Path to Healing and Transformation. And the magazine I started called Tikkun, T-I-K-K-U-N, which you can find on the web at www.tikkun.org, is started as a progressive Jewish magazine. Now it's interfaith as well. And it's a voice for people who recognize that there's a spiritual dimension to human needs that isn't being adequately addressed in our society, not by the right and not by the left. And so most recently, I've just written a new book called The Left Hand of God, Taking Back Our Country from the Religious Right. And I'm very pleased to say that in the 2 weeks that it's been out, it's become a bestseller around the country.
And that's why you are speaking at the First Unitarian Church and the First Congregational Church as well as other venues, mm-hmm. because you really address some of the frustration that we feel by the right's ability to kind of exploit the fear that is, you know, pervasive in the culture right now. So bring us current on your new book and how you kind of address some of that.
Well, the first thing is that unlike much of the left that thinks that the reason why we're losing is because the American public is stupid, I spent a huge amount of research time, the last 29 years, researching the psychodynamics of American society, along with a bunch of other colleagues, psychotherapists and social change activists. And we interviewed over 10,000 middle-income working people who were moving politically to the right. And what we discovered is that there is a deep spiritual crisis in American society, a crisis that actually is rooted in the ethos of materialism and selfishness that pervades the consciousness of Americans and is generated by the economic and political system that the right supports. But unfortunately, that spiritual crisis is only addressed by the political right. And they blame that then on feminists, on gays and lesbians, on Native Americans and African Americans, and most recently on all secular people, all liberals and activist judges. That is, they say that these are the forces that are bringing selfishness and materialism into the society. But you can't fight that unless you recognize that there really is a spiritual crisis. They have the wrong analysis of the spiritual crisis, but the left doesn't even understand that there is a spiritual crisis. It doesn't have any relevant categories to pick up the spiritual crisis, and as a result, it gives the whole spiritual issues over to the right. So we've decided to create a new national organization that we hope will influence the liberal and progressive forces and also challenge the right. And that new organization is called the Network of Spiritual Progressives, although it's not only open to religious people, because we're composed of both people from every religious background, from Protestant and Catholic and Jewish and Muslim and Hindu and Buddhist, to many people who are spiritual but not religious. They're not associated with any particular religious community, but they recognize that there is a spiritual dimension to human reality that is not being addressed by the Democratic Party, not being addressed by the Greens, not being addressed by the social change movements, and that it is the hunger for a spiritual dimension to life that pushes many people away from the left, particularly given that the left has a culture of religiophobia that essentially conveys the message to people who are religious or spiritual that they are probably on a lower level of intellectual or psychological development, and that they need that although we might need their votes, and don't be surprised if in 2006 and 2008 you find every Democratic Party candidate quoting the Bible left and right, but that's not the issue. But because simultaneously the left conveys to people that they're at a lower level, and that they can be tricked into voting for the left by virtue of throwing them a few Bible quotes. This book is really about providing a strategy to build an alternative. And in the book, The Left Hand of God, Taking Back Our Country from the Religious Right, in that book, I lay out a spiritual covenant with America, 8 points that lay out the specifics of how to build a spiritual politics. And as I say, it's not just a book, but it's also a movement. And so we're having a national conference in Washington, D.C., May 17th to 20th, to bring a spiritual politics into public discourse. We're asking people from every congressional district to come there to speak to their congressional representatives, and particularly to those who share some form of liberal or progressive vision, to ask them to include in the way that they start to they think about the society an analysis of the spiritual crisis, such as the one that I put forward in The Left Hand of God.
Well, having read about your new book, it really is interesting to talk about the political dimension and how religion has been used by the right to kind of justify and support this wholesale assault on what we in the left fought so hard to get. You know, it's about the war, it's about the degradation of the environment, it's about the concentration of wealth in the hands of a few, it's a lack of concern for the poor,
yes,
social justice.
See the amazing thing here is that so much of what the right's political program is in complete opposition to what the Bible and what the most of the spiritual traditions have taught through history. But see, what the left does is it is so angry at the right for the parts of the right that are racist, sexist, and homophobic, mm-hmm. that it assumes that all religion is that way. I mean, I had, I'm in Seattle now talking about the book, and I had this talk yesterday in which somebody comes up to me afterwards and says, yeah, you know, you're so right. Just 2 days ago, I was telling a friend that I couldn't go with them Sunday morning because I'm going to church, and this friend looked at me and said, I thought you were a Democrat.
As if they're mutually exclusive.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. As though they're mutually exclusive, as though you can't. And that's so pervasive in the left, because what people have done is to take what's the really bad stuff that exists in some of the reactionary forms of religion and fail to distinguish that from progressive forms of religion. And so many, it's amazing how many people on the left forget that the strongest moment in the history of the left in the last 40 years was when we were being led by Martin Luther King Jr.,
yes.
who every single demonstration started with a church service.
Yeah, so, in the name of religion.
Exactly.
Most
and yet that was our
movement.
Most powerful moment, was that when there was an integration. That, now, we're not saying that everybody should be religious or spiritual or believe in God. We're saying that the left has to open its ranks to a new understanding of the way in which a progressive spiritual consciousness could be the most effective, powerful critique of the globalization of capital that that anybody has articulated, because that globalization of capital is really in its core a globalization of selfishness and materialism. It is the globalization of values that are antithetical to the spiritual and religious traditions.
Well, and you're in good company. I know Cornel West has spoken here lately. And
yes, he's co-chair of this organization, the Network of Spiritual Progressives. He's the co-chair, along with me and with Sister Joan Chittister, a Catholic nun, Benedictine nun, who has is one of the most famous feminists in the religious world, who has joined also as a co-chair of the Network of Spiritual Progressives, which, by the way, people, if they are interested in joining, can find at www.spiritualprogressives.org.
Well, and like you said, if we seed this ground, then we've left this vacuum that has been filled and exploited with fear and all the other tools that the right has used to pit us against each other and to exploit the very worst of human nature. Which seems to be pervasive across the United States right now.
Yes, and this splitting need not happen, because what we're putting forward for the liberal and progressive forces, for anybody who will listen, really, is a new vision of a vision of what we are for. Too much of the left concentrates on what we are against. Of course, there's a lot to be against in George Bush and his policies, but there's also some good reason to criticize some of the Democrats for their lack of vision and their spinelessness. We're putting forward a unifying vision by calling for a new bottom line in American society. So the institutions, social practices, governmental practices, schools get judged not only by how much money or power they accumulate, or how much they teach people how to accumulate money and power, but also to the extent that they maximize love and caring, kindness and generosity, ethical and ecological sensitivity, and enhance our capacities to respond to the universe with awe and wonder. Now, when we start to talk in that kind of language, it's a language that most people have never heard coming from the left, and it speaks to many people on the right. But this isn't just asking for a cliche or a new slogan, because underneath this vision of a new bottom line is a concrete political plan that we are developing, and that is developed in my new book, The Left Hand of God, Taking Back Our Country from the Religious Right. That's what I'll be talking about at Powell's this coming Tuesday, and also at the Unitarian Church and the Congregationalist Church on Sunday.
Right. Rabbi Lerner, I love hearing the words awe and wonder
yes.
in relationship to the left.
Yeah, because you see,
for those
the thing
of us
is that that if we have that awe and wonder, that is the foundation for an environmental policy that is very different than simply let's protect this or let's protect that. It's a whole different attitude towards the universe that says it's not just there for us to exploit. It's there for us to respond to, that there's something sacred in the universe.
Well, I want to thank you, Rabbi Lerner, for being with us at KBOO today, and I want to remind our listeners of a couple of events where they can hear more regarding the present state of the U.S. and religion and our future. March 5th, which is Sunday, at 9 and 11, sermons at the First Unitarian Church, which is 1011 Southwest 12th. And for information, you can call 503-228-6389. And again, Sunday evening at 7 p.m. at the First Congregational Church, which is 1126 Southwest Park. And that number is 503-650-4447. Again, Rabbi Lerner will be a guest on the talk radio, which is this coming Monday, March 6th, from 7:30 till 9 o'clock, right here on KBOO. Rabbi Lerner, thank you. Thank you for all the good work you do in the world, and thanks for keeping the left active, invigorated, and involved.
Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity, and many blessings to you and all your listeners.
Thank you so much. Bye. This is Michelle Schroeder-Fletcher at KBOO 90.7 FM Portland.
And coming right up is Stage and Studio, and at 11 on Democracy Now!, the guests are John Pace of the United Nations Assistance Mission in Iraq on U.S. human rights violations in Iraq, and the director of Oxfam on government failures in Katrina recovery work.